of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include U.S. food prices see historic jump and are likely to stay high, and Durham small businesses request increase in relief fund. And we'll begin with U.S. food prices see historic jump and are likely to stay high. As if trips to the grocery store weren't nerve-wracking enough, U.S. shoppers lately have seen the cost of meat, eggs, and even potatoes soar as the coronavirus has disrupted processing plants and distribution networks. Overall, the cost of food bought to eat at home skyrocketed by the most in 46 years, and analysts caution that meat prices in particular could remain high as slaughterhouses struggle to maintain production levels while implementing procedures intended to keep workers healthy. While price spikes for staples such as eggs and flour have eased as consumer demand has leveled off, prices remain volatile for carrots, potatoes, and other produce because of transportation issues and the health of workers who pick crops and work in processing plants. In short, supermarket customers and restaurant owners shouldn't expect prices to drop anytime soon. Our biggest concern is long-term food cost. I believe they will continue to go up, said Julie Kalambakidis, co-owner of Adriano's Brick Oven, a restaurant in Glenwood, Iowa. Tamara Kennedy, who owns 9 Mexican-inspired fast food franchises in Iowa and Minnesota, joined Kalambakidis on a call set up by Iowa U.S. Representative Cindy Acme and said sometimes even getting essential ingredients is difficult. You can pick an ingredient, and I can tell you there are shortages, she said. Big fluctuations in food prices began in March when the coronavirus pandemic began to sink in for U.S. consumers. The Labor Department reports that the 2.6% jump in April food prices was the largest monthly increase in 46 years. Prices for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased the most, rising 4.3%. Although the 2.9% jump in cereals and bakery products wasn't as steep, it was still the largest increase the agency has recorded. Dairy and related products and fruit and vegetables increased by 1.5% in April. Egg prices also reached an all-time high record of more than $3 a dozen in late March, but they have since fallen to less than a dollar a dozen. The situation has been worse for meat prices, largely because of illnesses among slaughterhouse workers. The outbreak struck pork processing plants the hardest, but beef and chicken processors also saw some impact as thousands of workers tested positive for the virus, and the United Food and Commercial Workers Union said at least 44 workers had died of COVID-19 as of Friday. April retail prices for boneless pork chops and ham were nearly 6% higher than in March, and retail prices for hamburger and sirloin steak were about 4% higher, the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported. The price of whole fresh chickens rose by more than 12%. After numerous closures, most pork plants have reopened, but not often at full capacity, forcing pig farmers to euthanize animals that couldn't be processed. There are biological constraints to this, and that's why I would anticipate prices to stay high, at least for some period of time, said Trey Malone, an agricultural economist and professor at Michigan State University. If you're going to euthanize thousands of animals and it takes 6 months to raise a new one, obviously there's going to be some type of delay or buffer in the supply chain. By mid-May, beef and pork slaughterhouses were operating at about 60% capacity, though that figure has since climbed to nearly 90%, said Jason Lusk, an economist at Purdue University. Although Lusk was optimistic that the worst of the meat supply crunch is over, he said it's always possible that a second wave of illness could cause the situation to worsen. Some grocery prices jumps were because of people stocking up when the coronavirus first arrived. But even as some prices have dropped, the cost of produce, such as potatoes, onions, and carrots, has remained above last year's prices. Much of the increase appears to be because more people are cooking at home. For garlic, most of which is imported from China, a 278% price increase from a year ago is largely due to a sluggish supply chain in China. Jeff Dunn, CEO of Bolthouse Farms, a major provider of carrots and distributor of salad dressings and fruit and vegetable-based beverages, said he doesn't anticipate new supply problems, but he noted that some of his company's workers in distribution and field work have become sick and that there is an additional cost to implement and maintain procedures intended to keep workers safe. Someone has to pick up those cost, he said. There is a real cost being built across every supply chain, not just with us, but with the retailer in terms of incremental cost associated with COVID, Dunn said. At some point, if you want any chance to hold up any kind of margin, those costs are going to have to be passed on or somehow recognized by the government with some help. Given that the percentage of Americans' paychecks that go toward food has declined over the past 50 years, many people likely can handle the recent price increases. But the coronavirus also has pushed roughly 41 million Americans out of work, and for them, even a small price hike can be troubling. We've obviously seen this record increase in unemployment filings, and so there are more people who are at risk in that sense that they literally don't have any employment to secure the money that they would need to buy the food that they traditionally purchase, Malone said. For the people who are already operating on the margins, these price increases are non-trivial. It's also a rough time for livestock farmers who had hoped that after some down years, they would benefit from new trade deals and a strong domestic economy. Farmers thought they saw the light at the end of the tunnel, Lusk said. It turned out that it was the headlight of a train. And next, Durham small businesses request increase in relief fund. And this article begins by showing a picture of Matt Kelly, whose St. James restaurant was already closed after the downtown Durham gas explosion in April 2019. And he is among small business owners calling on the city and county to provide more money for coronavirus relief. He says, "I haven't been paid in almost 4 months. I haven't cashed any of my paychecks so my team could collect a severance." Small business owners in Durham asked city and county leaders Friday to increase a planned $1 million loan fund to $4 million, saying local officials aren't doing enough to help them survive the coronavirus pandemic. The Durham Small Business Coalition, meeting online with the mayor, city council, and members of the Durham County Board of Commissioners, asked the city to double a $1 million fund approved last week and the county to match it. We ask that you provide us with the urgent support and aid we need to adapt our businesses so we can keep our employees and customers safe and survive this crisis, said Leonardo Williams, co-owner of Zueli's Restaurant. We are not used to asking, but now we must. The City Council last week asked the City's Office of Economic and Workforce Development to create a plan for the $1 million relief program by June 4th. But small business owners on Friday's panel said the City hasn't acted urgently or provided any concrete solutions. The city has allocated $1 million. Duke University has allocated $1 million. The county will help. We need more private funders to step up, said Mayor Steve Shewell. I wish this was easier. We haven't been urgent enough, but we will. The coalition also asked that the relief be provided as grants, not loans. Durham City Attorney Kimberly Rayburg said last week that the city cannot offer grants because the state prohibits cities from giving money to individuals without a public purpose defined by statute. The proposed loans would be available to independently owned Durham companies in operation at least in 18 months with fewer than 25 full-time employees and under $2 million in income. The program would prioritize disadvantaged business owners. Wake County has approved a $5 million small business loan program called Wake Forward, which offers up to $50,000 in loans. Orange County opened applications April 10th for small business grants and loans. The Raleigh City Council approved a $1 million small business fund last month to provide grants as high as $10,000. Duke University's Duke Durham Fund is offering a total of $5 million in grants to local organizations, nonprofits, and small businesses. The second and third round of applications provide grants of up to $5,000 and close June 9th. Wendy Jacobs, the chair of the Durham County Board of Commissioners, said Durham's small business relief funds are lower than some other areas because the county received less money from the federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security, or CARES Act. A number of Durham small business owners said they received loans through the Federal Paycheck Protection Program. The program was established when the CARES Act was made law March 27th. Williams got his PPP loan this month, but said it's not enough to keep his Zimbalian restaurant in business. He will have to shut down in July unless he gets money from Durham to cover rent, he said. If we're going to take a more conservative approach to opening, we need some financial assistance, Williams said. Our sales are down 80%, and we're exhausting our savings. Small businesses that receive PPP loans must spend the money within 8 weeks and use 75% of the funds for payroll. Williams said his restaurant's greatest expense is rent, which the loan won't fully cover. Aureli Barrera de Grosky, the co-owner of Durham's Coco Cinnamon Coffee Shops, is asking the city and county to provide grants after she used most of her PPP loan. The PPP money is not a sustainable solution. We're grateful for the bit of relief, but every day is still not guaranteed, and we still have so many expenses as a business, she said. I understand it is a hard job to muster funds, but some businesses only have 10 days' worth of cash left. And next, U.S. consumer spending declines by record 13.6%. U.S. consumer spending plunged by a record-shattering 13.6% in April as the viral pandemic shuttered businesses, forced millions of layoffs, and sent the economy into a deep recession. Last month's spending decline was far worse than the revised 6.9% drop in March, which itself had set a record for the steepest one-month fall in records dating to 1959. Friday's Commerce Department figures reinforced evidence that the economy is gripped by the worst downturn in decades, with consumers unable or too anxious to spend much. Even with employers cutting millions of jobs, though, incomes soared 10.5% in April, reflecting billions of dollars in government payments in the form of unemployment aid and stimulus checks. Wages and salaries, normally the key component of overall income, sank by an annualized $740 billion in April. By contrast, income in the form of government support jumped by an annualized $3 trillion. That form of income, though, will likely fade in coming months as certain government aid programs expire. Friday's report showed sharp declines in consumer spending across the board, from durable goods like cars to non-durable items such as clothing to services ranging from doctor visits to haircuts. Spending tumbled 13.3% for durable goods, 16.2% for non-durables, and 12.2% for services. The economics of fear and sudden stops were apparent in April as fearful and lockdown households cut back on spending, Gregory Dako, chief economist at Oxford Economics, said in a research note. The depth of the spending drop is particularly damaging because consumer spending is the primary driver of the economy, accounting for about 70% of economic activity. Last month's figures signaled that the June-April quarter will be especially grim, with the economy thought to be shrinking at an annual rate near 40%. That would be by far the worst quarterly contraction on record. With spending plunging and income surging on the strength of government support payments, Americans' personal savings rate hit a record high of 33% of after-tax income in April. Economists said this underscored how anxiety and uncertainty about the economy are making consumers reluctant to spend. Dako suggested that more frugal consumer behavior will dampen recovery. This is particularly true as the social benefits will gradually erode over time, leaving households more financially constrained, he said. Friday's report showed that an inflation gauge preferred by the Federal Reserve fell 0.5% after a 0.2% drop in March. Fed officials have cited the absence of inflation pressures as one reason they can be aggressive in supporting the economy by cutting their benchmark interest rate to near zero and pumping billions of dollars into credit markets to keep them flowing smoothly. In April, the nation's jobless rate was 14.7%, the highest since the Great Depression, and many economists think it will top 20% for May. States are gradually restarting their economies by letting some businesses reopen with certain restrictions, and some laid-off employees are being recalled to work. Still, the job market remains severely depressed, and the outlook for the rest of the year is still bleak. Some financial support for the tens of millions of consumers who have been laid off over the past 2 months is coming from the weekly unemployment benefits. Besides whatever unemployment aid states are providing to laid-off workers, the federal government is providing $600 a week in additional benefits. And next, do credit cards encourage overspending? Swipe responsibly with these tips. The long-held idea that credit cards encourage overspending isn't necessarily false. A journal article by the University of Toronto researcher Dilip Soman found that those who have a history of using credit cards as a form of payment tend to overspend more than those who have a history paying with cash or checks. According to the article, cash and check payments produced a more painful, significant memory of the spending than payments with credit cards. This is to say, having the ability to visualize the amount you're paying could help keep your spending in check. While at a basic level, credit cards can make it easier to spend without much thought, they also offer a myriad of ways to improve your financial situation. The key is to practice self-discipline and utilize tools that help you conceptualize and track your spending. Most financial tools have the potential to benefit you or set you back depending on how you use them. For example, through compound interest, high-yield savings accounts allow you to earn based on the money you've deposited into the account. Yet if you overdraft the account to compensate for debts elsewhere, you'll most likely incur a fee and exasperate your situation. In terms of credit cards, owning one gets you a line of credit, though through which you can spend responsibly and well within your credit limit, or irresponsibly and over it. How you use these tools is up to your discretion. It is safe to say most people have overspent at least once in their lifetime, whether they were intentionally splurging on a big purchase or covering an unforeseen charge. If the idea of credit card debt from overspending keeps you up at night, no, it doesn't have to. Here are a few ways you can prevent overextending your finances and set yourself on the path toward long-term financial health. Stick to a budget. Track your spending. It's easier said than done, but creating a reasonable budget for yourself based on your income, necessary spending, and savings goals can help prevent accidental overspending. We recommend using something like YNAB, You Need a Budget, an app that forces you to allocate each dollar before you spend it, said Tara Unverzuk, financial planner at South Bay Financial Partners. It's hard to reverse your thinking if you're used to paying for things before you get your paycheck to pay for it. If you can shift your thinking, your life becomes much more relaxed. According to a 2019 survey by creditcards.com, emergency expenses, 35%, and day-to-day expenses, 28%, were the two leading causes of credit card debt for U.S. adults, followed by retail purchases, 18%, and vacations, 9%. This is to say that with proper budgeting and financial planning, credit card debt to cover necessities could be avoided. Set up spending alerts. If your credit card offers it, spending or transaction alerts are a great way to not only keep tabs on whenever a purchase is made using your card information, but can also help keep your spending top of mind. Transaction alerts are most commonly sent by way of email, text, or as push notifications through your card's mobile app. American Express, for example, allows users to set both spend and credit limit tracking alerts that notify you when you're approaching a previously determined threshold. Review your statement. Michael Ulane, financial planner and founder of WealthU Advisors, suggests going over your credit card statements each month to pinpoint where you may be overspending. This can be done using an account aggregative such as Mint.com, Ulane said. Using either the app or website, Mint allows you to link your credit cards, debt cards, and bank accounts. Each transaction is then automatically grouped by Mint into categories, making it easy to visualize your budget and spending patterns. Be prepared for hardship. While unforeseen events like medical emergencies or loss of income are bad enough in their own right, accumulating credit card debt because of them can make your situation even worse. Establishing an emergency savings fund with 3 to 6 months' worth of living expenses is one way to prevent breaking out a credit card when times get tough. To calculate your emergency fund, add up all fixed expenses, rent, utilities, mortgage, car payment, etc., plus food, Yulin said. One way to jumpstart your emergency fund is to scale back the spending you've allocated toward non-essentials like streaming services, clothing, and workout classes. By reducing your budget even slightly across multiple non-essential categories, you can deposit what you save into your emergency fund. You can do the same whenever you find yourself with extra cash, such as money received for a special occasion or any earnings from selling old items. And if you need help, ask. Sometimes, such as in the current climate, financial hardship can be brought on without warning. If you're ever in need of financial assistance, there's a likelihood that your credit card issuer can help. Amid the coronavirus pandemic, most major issuers are offering assistance such as payment deferment, waived late fees, and a pause in credit reporting that can be implemented by reaching out by way of phone, email, or chat. Going forward, having demonstrated history of responsible card use can improve your chances of receiving issuer help when you need it. And don't chase a reward you can't afford. Welcome bonuses or exclusive perks earned through spending with a credit card are great. But if the spending you do normally isn't enough for you to qualify, you'll most likely end up overspending. If you're in the market for a new credit card and a flashy offer catches your eye, keep in mind that you most likely won't receive the offer right away, and typically you'll have to reach a specific spending threshold within a set amount of time to earn it. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.